Right, good evening everyone. Can you hear me from the back? Okay. Alright, the topic that we're going to talk about today is the example of the Buddha. And the reason why I choose to talk on this topic is because I found that a lot of time we read a lot of Dharma books, we read the sutras of the Buddha, and sometimes we try to understand how to practice, but then a lot of time we try to only learn the method of practice, but we didn't try to, through the wordings or through the description in the teachings, try to understand the aspiration of the Buddha. So the Buddha was once a person like us living in the world. And he became a great teacher whom we all admire even after 2,600 years. So how did he present himself during his time? How did he relate with people? That would be something very interesting. How can he be such a great teacher that make everyone feel so admired and full of respect? So besides learning the teachings of how we purify ourselves, I think there are some bodily action, aspiration of the Buddha that we probably want to look in between lines, and that's probably some of the example that we want to learn as well. So it is just like you find that a lot of philosopher, great teachers, when they guide students, the students actually have to live together with them. Unlike today, you find that you go to university, you learn at the lecture hall only the knowledge. But if you read the history in Brahmanism, in Confucianism, religious teacher, anyone who want to learn from a teacher, they actually have to live together with the teacher and follow them wherever they go and learn and see how they deal with issues and how they communicate with others. And because of the changes that happened to education, today we have separated this daily bodily examples and knowledge, we have split them into two sections. And someone have went to Oxford University. She came back, she told me that, in fact, you need to make sure that you got a college where you can stay on campus before the university accept you. And that was the old system. I'm not sure whether you know about it. I think Cambridge, Oxford are still as such. Is that right? Some of you know your head. It's basically saying that when you attend the university to study the subjects, and then after the academic learning, you go back to stay in the college. Whether the college will have like discipline that they want everyone to follow, table manners that they want them to follow, and also other activities within the college that everyone has to participate. It's more of a training of working together with others and also communication with others. And this together it form education. But this day we have split them, and that's why you find that at University of Sydney they still have a lot of colleges, but then I think it doesn't play the role anymore. And same thing with the colleges here, it's more accommodation village that make money. So they have split it. But what I would like to say is that the full education encompasses the discipline, moral training, as well as the knowledge. And that's what happened during Buddha's time as well. And that's why I thought, if we can try to learn and try to understand in between lines the aspiration example of the Buddha, that will actually be will make our learning of the teachings of the Buddha more lively. Alright, so now let's see what are the examples of the Buddha. So I'll probably try to talk about the Buddha's example, some examples before he attained enlightenment, and also the examples after he attained enlightenment. Of course, more on after he attained enlightenment. But But before the Buddha attained enlightenment, he did show some great aspiration that worth us looking at, and also these are the aspiration that at the end make him a successful person. So firstly, is his great compassion in sharing the feelings of others. We all know that the Buddha was born as a prince, living in the palace, has very comfortable life. Now, as a prince who has very comfortable life, he can just enjoy his life in the palace. He can be a spoiled prince and don't understand why these people having suffering and got nothing to eat. Like kids today, sometimes they are too comfortable. You say, be considerate and share the feelings of others. No clue, don't understand, right? But the prince, although he lives in an environment as such, he's not a spoiled prince. He shares the feelings of others. When he sees the farmer farming the farm, working very hard and still can't have a good life, he feels sad. When he sees the earthworms was being eaten by the bird, he feels the pain of the earthworm. When he sees the little bird eaten by the eagle, he feels sad as well. Do we have that kind of feeling when we see things around us? So he feels that this is living beings, and this is a sign of his great compassion, that he have this great sympathy towards other lives, other living beings, and this become a driving force. So when he left before he left the palace, he visited the country. He saw four incidents: old age, sickness, death, and then he saw a monk. So when he sees someone in the old age, he feels the suffering. He was young and healthy. A lot of time when you talk to young and healthy people, they do not understand the suffering that Mr. Wong has, right? So, but for him, although he's young and healthy, he can just ignore. But he questioned. He shared the pain. He shared the suffering. And when he sees sickness, he relate, and he also go in depth in thinking about it. And when you see death, people say, well, this is natural. Everyone has to die one day. But he didn't just leave the question as it is. He see the pain that everyone goes through, but then why there's no answer? Are we born in this world, just born into this world, getting old, become sick and die, and that's it? Then what's the purpose of life? So because of great compassion, of sharing the feelings of others, that become a driving force, that he wants to search for an answer. So then finally he decided to leave the palace in search of the truth. Now when he left the palace, he did not leave the palace because King Suddhodana controlled him too much. He did not leave the palace because he wanted more enjoyment. In fact, when he left the palace, he put aside his personal enjoyment, his personal luxuries that he has in the palace. So some people may be thinking, he left the palace, he's very selfish. The reason why he left the palace is not because of personal freedom or enjoyment, because he has a more important task in his mind, that he wants to come back with an answer that can bring more people happiness and peace. So he sacrificed the short-term happiness he has, including the happiness that his family members are supposed to have if he stays with them. So you may say that he's quite selfish, but then his mind is more towards how to help everyone. So you can see that his mind is how can he find the truth for the sake of all beings, not just his family members, but for all. So that's why you can see that his great compassion and his great mind, and then also his determination. When he left the palace, when he searched for the truth, his determination in trying to overcome difficulties, he tried many methods of practice, including torturing himself. It doesn't work. He changed his method. And so he tried and moved on when he find that it is not logical, but he's determined. At the last stage, when he tried to overcome the Maras, his great determination. So you can see that even before he attained enlightenment, his great compassion, his great determination, his great mind for all beings is all the very important driving force behind. So that's before he attained enlightenment. So after he attained enlightenment, the Buddha's action after he attained enlightenment, when he attained enlightenment, there was a saying initially he was thinking, should I or should not I teach? And a lot of people thought, the Buddha left the palace out of great compassion, and now he attained enlightenment, he asked this question, should I not teach? So why is it so? Yeah, the teaching is so difficult to understand. It's so difficult to understand that sometimes people will misunderstand. When people misunderstood, sometimes you got people who are a bit arrogant, they then will start to defame. They will criticize and defame. And so the Buddha knows that what he has realized is actually the truth. And because he has realized and he attained peace and ease, he knows that that is really the truth, that which is so good and so profound. But then for a lot of people, it may be difficult. And he knows as well, if there are people who, because of our own stubbornness, our own arrogance, our own ignorance, we start to defame or even try to destroy the good teaching, the noble teachings of the Buddha, that this is going to lead to a very unwholesome karma, that the person will probably have to suffer himself or herself. So he thought, if I didn't say anything, they wouldn't do some serious unwholesome karma as such. Maybe it would be better for me not to say. Yes?
Sir, if I read about the pain, if a Buddha teach something and someone that depend can be suddenly killed by the gods.
It's not saying suddenly killed by the god. It's that because it's such a great teaching, and it's such a profound teaching that can help a lot of people. If someone try to destroy the teaching, you find that you actually create a lot of unwholesome karma for yourself. Because the good teachings is supposed, for example, if someone says some good teachings, and initially you may want to believe, and it will help you in the future. But then someone starts to say, no, I don't believe, and this is wrong, and things like that. It will stop a lot of people from being able to understand and also gain benefit out of it. So you find that in this way, you're actually creating unwholesome karma, and also you create obstruction to yourself to realize the truth, because you obstruct other people from learning. That is cause and effect. So that's why the Buddha was hesitating. So his hesitation is still out of great compassion. And that's why at the end, but he also remembered, he left the palace in search of the truth to come back with something. Now that he has realized, of course he need to remember his promise, his vow. And he can't just let all beings to continue to live in ignorance. So at that time, one of the heavenly king requested the Buddha, say that it is rare to have Buddha born in this world, so it would be good if the Buddha can teach, because although there could be some people who are not ready to accept the teaching, there may be some other people who are ready. So the Buddha then think for quite a while, and then finally he decided to teach according to the acceptance levels of the audience, of the people. So instead of talking about selflessness, impermanence, selflessness, emptiness, right in the beginning, because when he realized that everything arises due to causes and conditions, There's no fixed entity at all. We have wrongly cling to things as a fixed thing. But to break through this is just, it's to ask people to just let go this clinging is just difficult. And it's difficult for people to perceive. So he decided to teach according to the acceptance levels of the students, but at the same time, pave the way to the realization of the truth. So instead of talking about selflessness, non-self, let go your ego, right in the beginning, he talked about the Four Noble Truths in a very systematic and scientific way. Do you understand that there are causes of suffering? Or there are? Do you feel that there are frustration and restraint in life? Everyone said yes, we feel like frustrated sometimes. Where does the frustration come from? He started to teach from what people can understand. And then he tell them, see, you feel frustrated. That's come from our desire, our selfishness. We are overly protecting ourselves. So it starts from what they can understand. And this teaching is not deviating from the truth as well. It's just that teach in a practical way for the audience to listen and then try it out themselves, and by reducing their greed, hatred, jealousy, arrogance, selfishness, their mind become more calm, and then you start to say, contemplate, everything is impermanent, everything arises and falls, everything is dependent originated, it arises due to causes and conditions. Slowly people can understand. So he teach the Four Noble Truths, and also teach the Noble Eightfold Path. And you find that the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, is also back, is actually set the foundation on the teachings of dependent origination. It's just that instead of using the theory and teach the theory, he teach it in a practical way that people can apply in their life and experience dependent origination in life. That's something that we probably want to learn from the Buddha as well. That a lot of time, some of you may want to tell your friends about the Dharma or want to share the Dharma with your family members, and sometimes you find that they are not ready to listen to you, or you find that it's difficult. Then we need to remember, when the Buddha teach us, he faced the same problem as well. But the Buddha was wise and skillful and compassionate. So when he teach the young kids, he talk to the young kids using the young kids' language. Use examples that the young kids can understand. When he teach the high school students, he use what the high school students can understand. When he teach a businessman, he use a businessman's examples that the businessman can relate. But the principle behind the teachings is the same. So that's why when we reflect on how the Buddha compassionately guide us, then when we want to share the teachings with our friends and family members, be patient as well. The Buddha has been very patient with us. He has taught us for 2,600 years, and we are still caught in ignorance. And then sometimes we listen to the teachings and say, yes, it makes sense. We turn around, we forgot about it. So therefore, when we understand how the Buddha compassionately guides us with skillfulness and wisdom and compassion, when we try to share the teachings of others, we need to have this patience and try to understand the acceptance levels of the person that we are talking to. Use the example and they can understand. And also, do not expect or do not force them to accept 100% of what you say. As long as that they can develop some likeness to what you want to say, they can, because the Buddha always say, it's not necessary for you to just accept everything that I say. If you have doubts, just ask. Important thing is do not leave your doubts there and don't want to clarify and don't want to believe as real. Then you're not going to ever improve. But if you have doubts, ask, clarify, then it enlightens you. So that's first thing, the Buddha's skillfulness in teaching according to the acceptance levels of the audience. And then secondly, the Buddha is very skillful. There are a lot of very skillful examples on how the Buddha tried to teach people according to the acceptance levels and at the same time do not make them feel embarrassed. So when the Buddha, during Buddha's time, so Buddhism was a new religion in India, you know, in India, in the ancient India. So there are a few examples, like how there were this very famous group called the fire worshippers. So the Buddha, the fire worshipper has thousands of followers. And the Buddha want to go to share with them what he have realized. So he go to the fire worshipper, he didn't actually say that, I'm the Buddha, I'm now the great teacher, you have to listen to me. No, he didn't do something as such. He went to the fire worshipper, and the fire worshipper actually did not know who was he. He just go as like normal. And the fire worshipper lived in the cave. And so he just go to the fire worshipper around evening time and say, this is getting dark and I need a place to stay. Do you have a cave that's empty that I can stay for a night? So the fire worshipper say, well, all caves has been occupied. There's only one cave left, but no one can live in there. So the Buddha said, why? He said, because there is a poisonous snake in there. Whoever go in, you probably can't live alive and get out the next morning. So the Buddha said, that's fine. As long as there's a cave for me to sit at night, that's good enough. So he went into the cave. Next morning, he came out of the cave, fresh and awake. And the fire worshipper was very surprised. And so they asked the Buddha. They say, "What? How can you manage to come out alive?" The Buddha said, "I did nothing. I just go in and meditate, and the poisonous snake was tame, and the snakes didn't harm me." So the Buddha was so peaceful and serene himself, because the Buddha is a person who is free from afflictions. His mind is full of kindness, compassion. He's just peaceful and calm. So even the poisonous snake feels calm and being tamed. And so the fire worshippers start to feel this person is quite unique. And so they develop a sense of respect. And so they start to ask him, what is your teaching? Then the Buddha told them about some teachings. And the Buddha said, you like to worship fire. And I do have worshipping of fire in my religion. And so the fire worshipper then asked, what's your fire? And so the Buddha then say, if we can extinguish the fire of greed, the fire of hatred, the fire of delusion in our mind, we will be really peaceful and happy. That's the bliss that you're going to attend. Because the fire worshipper hope that by worshipping the fire, they can gain peace and ultimate happiness. The Buddha tell them that if you extinguish these three fire, you will gain ultimate happiness. So he was very skillful. He used example they can understand and then guide them accordingly.
Yes, I believe that at the time that whenever Buddha goes, he already see that all these people he went to meet is going to be enlightened because of his capability to see these things.
Yes, the Buddha, because the Buddha himself is so peaceful, so like all of us here, if the Buddha is here, I think just very naturally you will be very tame because of his serenity and his peacefulness. Okay, so and also his wisdom and his skillfulness in teaching. He make you feel like it's so logical and it's so right. Yeah. So you can see that the Buddha is always so skillful, and Brahmanism have these rituals of sacrificing animals. So the and they believed that by sacrificing the animals, they burned the animals, the gods will smell the animals, and then that's a kind of offering to the gods. So the Buddha also tell them that I have three types of fire. That's a kind of that you can use as offering. What kind of fire? He say, first is the fire that you use to take care of your parents. Second is the fire that you use to take care of your family members. Number three is the fire that you use to make offerings to the religious teachers. By taking care of your parents, your family members, by showing respect to your religious teacher, you will have good merits. See, the Buddha teach in a way that it is not superstitious, it is just cause and effect. You fulfill your dutiful respect to your parents. You fulfill a dutiful respect to your family members, relatives, and friends. When you need support, support will come. You fulfill your dutiful respect to your religious teacher. In other words, you will also uphold good moral values. Of course, your life will be happy. See? So the Buddha's teaching is logical, it's not something superstitious. But then he tried to share his teaching in a very skillful way to a lot of religious group during his time. And the other story, which I think most of you will probably have heard, is that there's this boy called Singala. He has this, his father passed away. Before his father passed away, his father wants this boy to have a happy life all the time because the father is passing away. So the father told him that every morning you have to go and pay respect to the sixth direction, the gods in the sixth direction, so that the gods in the sixth direction can protect you. So every morning, this Singala, he shower himself, he makes himself clean, he go to the riverbank, pray to the east, pray to the south, pray to the north, pray to the west, pray to the above and below, and all the sixth direction, and hope that the gods in the sixth direction protect him. So one day, Buddha saw him, and the Buddha went to him and said, "Young man, what are you doing? And so Singala told the Buddha that was the advice from his father. So the Buddha said, "Oh, is that so?" He said, I also have the practice of paying respect to the six directions, and it can also bring you bliss, peacefulness, and ease." And so Singala then said, "Well, you can tell me your six directions." So the Buddha then tell him that paying respect to the six direction, worshipping the six direction, the gods in the six direction, the east, parents, and children. So it depends. So the one direction is showing, if you are the parents, then remember your duty to the children. If you are the children, then we remember the parent, our duty to the parents. Of course, we play both roles, right? So one direction is the duty of parents and children. So if we can fulfill our duties, it is just like worshipping the gods in this direction. That's these people in this direction. That's fulfilling our duty. And then one direction is the teachers and pupils relationship. So how we should fulfill our dutiful respect to the teachers as a student, or as a teacher, what kind of duty do we have to our student? And then the next one is spouse relationship. So fulfill our dutiful respect to the husband or to the wife. And then the next one is your duty to your friends. And then the next one is the employer-employees relationship. So the boss will have some duty to take care of the employee. The employee do also have some duty to fulfill what they have promised for the employer. And then the last one is the duties between religious teachers and the followers. So this sixth direction basically shows the relationship that we engage in our society. So you can see that the Buddha, when the Buddha teach, he's very skillful, and he's not running away from the society. His teaching is actually in our daily life, and he actually teaches us how we can live happily with the people around us. And if everyone fulfills their duties, then you find that parents fulfill their duty, children fulfill their duty, teachers fulfill their duty, and students fulfill their duty, and husband and wife fulfill their duty, and they have their faithfulness to one another. Friends and an employer, employee, religious teachers, and followers, if everyone fulfills their duty, the society will be very, very peaceful. If you are a person who make sure that you fulfill all this duty, you'll find that your relationship with all these people will be very good. Then whenever you need help, help will just come. It is much, the help will come much faster than you worshipping the God. Because when you worship the God, you ask the God to help you, you do not know when are they happy to help you. But if you help, like the real people around you, when you need help, you say, Daniel, help me. He will come. Right? You can call and talk to him. What is your problem? But when you worship, you only talk and you don't hear the response. You do not know whether they hear you or not. So that shows the Buddha's skillfulness in teaching. And also, when he teach, he was very, very compassionate. So there was in the Samyukta Nikaya, there's one story that says that there was a group of children. They were playing sandcastle near the beach. They built castle, and then they even tried to use the sand to make rice. Or the, you know, kids they play. They just treat the sand like real thing. So the Buddha came along, and the kids feel very happy. So they say, we like to make some offering to the Buddha as well. So they use the sand. They say, because, you know, kids when they play, they use the sand, they fry noodles, or they cook, they use the sand as... So then they really pretend that they are cooking, and then they say, they tell the Buddha, please enjoy our noodles, but it's all sand. The Buddha did not say no. The Buddha just accepted their offerings with a happy heart. Just let them put them into his bowl. Because the kids come with a very sincere mind. They don't mean to joke. They're just sincerity. And in fact, so after the kids make their offering, the kids were very, very happy. And then after the Buddha go past, and then the Buddha tell Ananda to take the sand and just spread the sand along the footpath of the Buddha. So that shows the compassion of the Buddha in understanding the goodwill of someone and not saying that because this is sand you didn't pour into my bowl, this is for me to eat. No, he didn't attach to that. And so that shows the Buddha's compassion and even so when he guides the people during his time, you find that there are people who are very, very smart. There are also people who are less intelligent. So there's this story of Sundara Pintaka. Have you heard of Sundara Pintaka? There's a young boy who's a bit slow in learning. He has a brother who is very fast in learning. His brother heard the Buddha's teaching, and the brother wants to renounce and become a monk. So Sundara Pintaka feel that he wants to become a monk as well. But the brother said, no, you're too slow. You can't, because the Buddha's teaching is for someone who can learn, because Buddha's teaching is not easy. But then this little brother really feel like he wants to become a monk. So the big brother said, then you follow me first. Don't go to the Buddha as yet. I train you first. So the brother didn't try to train the little brother by asking him to remember some sutra, some verses of the Buddha. But then, whenever he teach him first sentence, he forgot about the second sentence. He asked him to repeat the second sentence, he forgot about the first sentence. So at the end, his brother gave up. So you're too dull. No, you can't be a monk. So the little brother started to cry. And then came the Buddha. The Buddha said, why are you crying? He said, my brother say, I'm too dull and I cannot be a monk. The Buddha said, the Buddha's teachings come from me. So come with me, I'll teach you. So the Buddha then took Sundarapitaka to his vihara, and then, but this Sundarapitaka is really slow, because the Buddha tried to teach him, the Buddha teach him something very simple. The Buddha say, give him a broom. He said, help me to clean the vihara. So when you sweep the floor, you just recite, sweeping the floor, cleaning the mind. Okay? So it takes quite a while for the Buddha to teach him these two sentences. Then he said, sweep the floor, what is the next sentence? And then clean the mind, then what is the first sentence? So, but at the end, he managed to remember. Sweeping the floor, cleaning the mind. And so he did that for quite a long time. And then one day, he looked at the broom. The broom, because after you use the broom for a long time, it become old and it become a bit rotten. And he looked at that broom, and because the broom's become a bit rotten, so he sort of hit the broom a bit, and then the dust start to fly. And then when he looked at the dust, he suddenly realized that the Buddha teach him to sweep the floor, clean the mind, that he realized that there are dust in his mind. And the dust is this greed, this hatred, this grouch, this anger. So he realized that and he let it go. And he immediately feel the sense of ease and peace. And so he attained enlightenment. So that's how the Buddha was very, very skillful, that he knows what type of methods suit certain of the followers. So his compassion, his skillfulness, and also equality to everyone. So he says that this person is smarter than the other one. I only want to teach a smart one. Like you come from the selective school. Okay, all good one. The Buddha say the Sangha order is for everyone. So he even want to try to break, because in India the caste system is a very strong system. That they divide people into four castes. So in India the society has a divide people into four castes. The first, the top one is the religious teachers. Then you got the royal and the warrior, and then you got the free merchant, people who have a little bit of small business and able to support themselves. And the last one is slave. So the people in different castes are not supposed to mix. And so, but then the Buddha feel that, in fact, look at all of us. Our afflictions are all the same. Greed, hatred, jealousy, arrogance. Whether you come from Thailand, you come to Malaysia, you come from Indonesia, we are all the same. And 2,600 years ago, people have those afflictions. Up to today, we still have these afflictions. So the Buddha understand that, in fact, all living beings or human beings have the same nature. And in fact, everyone can purify themselves. We should not discriminate people according to their color, to their height or short. In fact, everyone has the same potential. And so he wants to break through this. But of course, to change a society is difficult. So he starts to change, to advocate equality within the Sangha order. So within the Sangha order, so what he have done is that 6 years after he attained enlightenment, he went back to the palace to teach the royal families. And a lot of the prince, a lot of his cousins, were very impressed, and they were very happy, and they wanted to become monks as well. So they asked a barber to help them to shave their hair first. So this barber is a slave. The barber also heard the Buddha's teaching, and he feel like he wants to become a monk as well. But then he thought Prince Siddhartha was a prince. Now he became a Buddha. So the Prince Siddhartha's teaching must be for the prince, for the royal family only, because at that time, only why is the religious teachers of the highest class? Because they feel that religious teacher is the only person who can communicate with the gods, and that's why they are the highest. So even king want to communicate with the god, have to tell the religious teachers to do that. You see, so the slave taught this slave called Upali. He taught, probably I have no chance to become a monk, so he feel very sad. And so as the prince tried to go to the Buddha's Vihara, Upali, the slave, tried to follow them as well. But then he stopped halfway and he started crying because he feel that he probably don't have a chance to become a monk. And the Buddha knows what's happening. So the Buddha then went to talk to Upali, and then Upali told him that he likes to become a monk, and he don't think that he can become a monk because he was a slave. So then the Buddha said, in my Sangha order, everyone is equal. So then the Buddha ordained Upali first. And when the prince came to the Buddha, the Buddha said, you all have been prince for such a long time, and the life of monk is tough. So you better try out first for 2 weeks before you officially renounce. So ask them to stay in a hut next to the Vihara, and just experience the life for 2 weeks first. And also to really let go some of your attachment to the prince status. Yeah. So 2 weeks later, the prince came to the Buddha and said, I think we have thought about it very carefully. We still want to become a monk. So the Buddha said, okay. So the Buddha ordained them. And in the Sangha order, we show respect not according to how well someone practice, but according to seniority. That's whoever ordained first will become like your elder brother. So it's just like in your family. At home, if you are the youngest, but you are the smartest, you still have to respect your elder brother. Is that right? It should be the way. Whoever's elder, we need to always show our respect to the elder. So in the Sangha order, the seniority follows by who has become a monk first. So Upali has become a monk 2 weeks earlier than them. So then the Buddha asked Upali to come to the front and asked the prince to bow to Upali. And the prince was shocked. They said, how can we bow to a slave? The Buddha said, when you come to my Sangha order, there's no such thing as prince or slave anymore. Everyone is equal. So that's how he skillfully break through the caste system within his order, which is within his capacity. To change the society, it probably has to take longer time. But then at least he can do what he can within the society, within his community. So this shows that when the Buddha teach and guide others, he's full of wisdom, compassion, skillfulness, and the mind of equality. Okay. And so besides that, you can see that the Buddha, during his lifetime, he's always full of energy. He's very diligent in trying to help people from one place to another. You go to this Jeta Vihara in Sravasti, which is northwest of India, up to Bamboo Grove in Magadha, two banks of Ganges rivers, just walk from one place to another non-stop. So he's diligent in helping others. even up to the brink of death, before he entered Parinirvana at Kushinagara. Subhadra, the last person who came, who was actually an heretic, a non-follower of the Buddha, heard that the Buddha is entering Parinirvana very soon. So he said, I still have a question, I better go and ask. So the Buddha was quite sick, lying between the two sala trees. So Ananda and the rest tried to stop Subhadra from disturbing the Buddha, because the Buddha was weak and sick at that time, 8 years old. But then the Buddha heard that there's someone asking to see him. He let Subhadra come in and teach Subhadra, and Subhadra then became the last disciple of the Buddha. So you can see that the Buddha teach until the last moment before he entered Parinirvana. Before he entered Parinirvana, he gave the teachings of his last teaching, try to summarize the important aspect of practice, and also give encouragement to the disciples not to feel sad after he entered Parinirvana, but uphold the precepts as the teacher. And he highlighted that as long as everyone practices the teachings of the Buddha, then it is just that the Buddha is always in the world. So the Dharma body of the Buddha is always in the world. What does it mean? Because the Buddha became a Buddha because he realized the truth. Anyone who can realize the truth that the Buddha realized will understand why the Buddha is the Buddha. Does it make sense to you? You will be in the same frequency. So if in the world there are people who continue to learn the Buddha's teaching, diligently practice and realize what the Buddha realized, and be able to share the teachings with others, it is just like the life of the Buddha is being prolonged. If the Buddha physically stay in the world and everyone just worship him and not learning the teachings, then it's just like the Buddha is stagnant there. So if no one learned the teaching, then say for example now everyone just pray to the Buddha, no one listen to Dharma talk, no one want to learn the teachings, and then 100 years later, people still may still see the image of the Buddha because of this artwork and so on. They just worship the Buddha and pray to the Buddha, but they did not know how to make themselves wiser, and they don't even know the teachings of cause of suffering and how to end suffering and how to realize the truth of impermanence, selflessness. No one knows, but only knows that the Buddha was born 2,600 years ago. He was a great teacher that a lot of people admire, and so we keep praying and praying. Then it is the teachings, then people will only know if, say, 100 years, 200 years, or 1,000 years later, it ends up to be Buddhism become a religion where people just pray, not knowing the teaching. It defeats the purpose of the Buddha being born in this world. So the Buddha say, although I'm entering Parinirvana, as long as everyone uphold the precepts, learn the teachings diligently, as long as there are people who can realize what I've realized, it is just like the body, the life of the Buddha is prolonging. Does it make sense? Okay, so that's why the Buddha, you can see that he's full of energy when he was around in the world. And he did not only talk about these lofty, high moral values and profound theories. His teaching can be in any part of our life. He talks about social and economic welfare as well. So there are people who go to the Buddha and say, how can we, as a layperson, have a happy and peaceful life now and in the future? The Buddha tell the young man, this young man who went to the Buddha called Usaka, the Buddha said, firstly, you must master a skill. Learn a skill, have a right livelihood, an occupation that does not bring harm to others, a right occupation, and be energetic and earnest in what you are doing, the profession that you are engaging in. And then secondly, he said, you need to protect your income. You are working hard, Some people, they work hard and they just chuck their money on the table and let the robbers take it away. That's wasteful. So, although the Buddha teaches us to be contented, but you need to try to make sure that if you want to have a happy life, to have material sufficiency is still a basic. So he said, protect your income. Make sure that you don't let your income be wasted in an unnecessary way. And then thirdly is to have good friends. We need to have friends that encourage us. We don't want to have friends that ask you to go to casino all the time, ask you to go to pub all the time, or ask you to take drugs or whatever it is. Now those friends will help you to waste away your money, drain away your money. So that's why to have good friends is very important. And also he tells us that we need to spend our money in a reasonable way, not to be too stingy and not to be too wasteful. Because some people, they earn a lot of money, they like to put the money in the bank and then look at the figure, but they just do not want to use. Even when they're sick, they say, no, when I see a doctor, I need to pay $7. And they don't want to see a doctor. That's not right. Because the Buddha talked about middle path, right? So, and he even tell people how to divide their money. The income that you have, you need to divide into four portions. Any one of you remember the four portions?
Yes.
Did you divide your money into four portions?
Not for the donation part.
Not for the donation part. Okay. So, the four portion, what is the first one? Yeah, so basic necessity that is needed for yourself. Okay. And then another portion?
Family.
So, another portion will probably for, yes, family, miscellaneous, for example, sometimes you may need to buy a present for your friends, or you feel that you want to relax, you want to go for a tour, yes. So there's another portion. And then there's one more portion for emergency. And then there's one portion for charity. So now the division as such, you can see that it allows you to have a life which is not too luxuries. At the same time, you're not going to say, oh, no, I can't waste money as well, because you've got a portion which is miscellaneous, which allows you to buy presents for your friend, which allows you to go for holiday if you need to have a bit of relaxation. You see? And then you've got another portion which is emergency. So that's more like saving, in case anything happens. That's more saving. And then the charity one is actually cultivating good merits for the future. Because we all want to have a life which is peaceful and happy, and one of the basic conditions is that we should not be in shortage. Even if you want to learn the Dharma, you need to have basic sufficiency. If you are so poor that even you can't even have enough food to eat, then it's very difficult to talk about practice. So basic sufficiency is needed. And how can we have basic material sufficiency that is to generosity? So that's why one portion for charity is to cultivate merits for this life as well as for the future life. And remember, this is the Buddha's teaching to the lay people. Of course, for the monks, then he may tell them to learn to break through attachment and attend Nirvana. But because this is asked by a lay person. Right, so you can see that that's why we say the Buddha teach according to the acceptance levels of the people, and that he also the Buddha also engaged in, so he cares about the social and economic welfare of general people, and also he care about the country. Some people say Buddhism don't care about the society, whatever it is. Now there were incidents that the Shakyan clan and the Kolya, well, in fact, those two clan is closely related to Prince Siddhartha. Prince Siddhartha's father was a Shakyan clan, and the mom came from Kolya. And once they have a fight over a river, because in the olden days people use river for all their drinking and everything, so they have a fight over the river, and Buddha actually go to them and mediate the conflict, the argument. So you can see that he, although he's he should be a person who is at peace and is supramundane, not engaging in the society, but as a person who is living in this world, he did try his best to try to help everyone to live in harmony. And so he also gives a lot of times, because he became popular and a lot of kings sometimes come to him to ask for advice, ask for as well. So, and the advice that he usually gives to a king is that he told the king that, because like a lot of country, sometimes they say, oh, the country is in chaos, a lot of crime. So then the government use more stronger punishment and try to prevent crime. And the Buddha's advice is that to prevent crime or to eradicate crime, the best way is to improve your economic growth, to change the economic condition of the people. If their economic condition can be improved, everyone is being provided with opportunity to earn sufficient income, they will have less fear and anxiety, and their basic need is being satisfied, then you find that there will be less of robbery and stealing and so on. And consequently, the country will be more peaceful and be able to be free from crime. So, and he even gave advices to king. He said the duty of the kings. If you want your country to be strong, healthy, and peaceful, the king should fulfill these 10 duties. One is that this king should practice generosity and charity. Try to give as much as you can for the sake of your people. That's first thing. If the king are very willing to give, you find that your people will automatically support you. Isn't it? If the king are generous. And secondly, the king need to have high moral character. If the king get themselves drunk, have bad habits, you find that this day, these journalists like to always look at all these high-ranked people, their private life. If they're anything immoral, you find that they will try to make a big story out of it. So high moral characters, and try to sacrifice everything for the good of the people. That's something the king should do, and the king should have honesty and integrity. And should have kindness and gentleness as a king. So basically the advice that the Buddha gave is basically for any leader. And then the king should also have have good habits, lead a simple life and self-control. And this is something that you find that people like to, generalists like to look at all these high-class people and see if they lead a very luxurious life themselves and where does this money come from to support this luxury life that they have. So if the king himself lead a simple life and self-contained, you find that people will look up on you. And then the king should be free from hatred, ill will, and enmity. That is, you should not hold hatred and ill will and hate your people, but rather you should be kind and try to think of how you can do to help your people. And do not use violence, okay? And be patient, forgiving, tolerate, and understanding. To rule in harmony with people. So if you have anything that you feel like ruling the country and the people who do not like it very much, and there's so many people who do not like it, then you have to try to negotiate with the people and try to rule the country in harmony. Because if 80% of the people are against your this policy, and then you insist that you want to do it, that is going to lead to a lot of unhappiness. So you can see that the Buddha is not only teaching about impermanence and all these profound teachings of selflessness, but he actually teach about something in the society. The reason why he can do this is because he understands that these teachings are not deviating from the teachings of dependent origination as well. He's just using, because in his mind, he understands the teaching of cause and effect very clearly, the teaching of dependent origination, selflessness very clearly, and he just transformed them into the level that the ordinary people can understand. So at least when they follow those teachings, they firstly, if they are unable to attain enlightenment as yet, at least they free themselves from, they can avoid themselves from committing unwholesome deed, and also make sure that they bring happiness to others. Okay, so the Buddha told the lay people a lot about economic welfare, which is an important part for human happiness, but then he did not. He did not say that this is the only thing that is needed, because usually he tells them that you need to practice generosity, you need to have a skill, earn income, but then he also tells them that if you want to have real happiness and peacefulness, then to develop moral and spiritual character is important. So have sufficient material life, material needs, and then add on the teachings of spiritual development. So he tells them that you need to cultivate faith and confidence in the triple gem, in the precepts, uphold good moral values, practice generosity, cultivation of wisdom. So with your stable social economic welfare, plus your faith and confidence in the triple gem, upholding good moral values, practice of generosity, cultivation of meditation and wisdom, then you're going to path your way to a good future. So that's how the Buddha tried to guide the people. So so you can see that the Buddha's teachings covers a lot aspect of our life. So it just shows that how the Buddha energetically involved in the people. And also you can see that how he applied the teachings of dependent origination in life in a very skillful way. For example, his views on precepts. So he did highlight that when the precepts of the Buddha said, there's always a reason behind. It's not so. For example, the monks have 250 rules. The nuns have got 300 odd rules. And you find that every rules, there's a story behind. It is very interesting. Sometimes it can be just minor, but people go and complain to the Buddha. Then Buddha set the rules, and this is very interesting. So, but then more importantly, he tells us that we should not uphold the precepts rigidly as per the line of the text, but to understand the principle behind. You should not say that, okay, the Buddha set 5 precepts, no killing, no stealing, no lying, no sexual misconduct, no alcohol. Well, that's in the old books we write, no alcohol. So some people say, the Buddha said no alcohol, so we can go to a casino, we can take drugs, right? We can take opium, because the Buddha didn't say that. So there are people who like to argue with that. They didn't realize that the reason why the Buddha set that rules is to tell us to avoid anything that confuses our mind. Because we want to practice the Buddha's teaching. We want to become clearer in our mind. We want to understand things thoroughly. And why do we want to take things confuse our mind? So people who cling on to the words and not understand the principle, the Buddha say they are like the upholding the way that they uphold precepts are like the dog chasing after the baits. You know what does it mean? The guide dog is supposed to guide the gate, make sure that no robber comes in. If robber comes, usually they throw a piece of meat. Then the dog will go and chase after the meat and forgot to guide the gate, the door. So this is saying that the precepts that the Buddha said in writing is some guidelines for us to guide our mind. But if you are chasing after the wording, not guiding your mind, it is just like this dog that chased after the meat and forgot about your mind. Does it make sense? So there are people who may try to say, okay, I need to make sure that the Buddha said we can't do this, we can't do this. So they say, I better, if I live in the society, I live in the city, I will bound to have all this distraction, I better go and live in the forest. So if they live in the forest, avoid from the distraction of the five desire, they say, okay, I'm okay. But whenever they come out, the mind is still got distracted. So this is still not good. This is basically just running away. So more importantly is for us to understand the rules, the principle behind, and make sure that we use that rules to reflect our mind and purify our mind. Because all the rules that the Buddha set is basically to help us to reduce the greed, hatred, ignorance, arrogance, jealousy in ourselves. So if you are able to uphold the precepts, understand the precepts, then, because there are people who like to ask me, or sometimes even religious teachers from other religion, Catholics or Christian, they say, they do find that sometimes certain rules are not adaptable to the modern society. They ask me if there's any problem. I say, as long as you know the principle, I don't feel that there's any problem. So you need to understand, for example, the rules of not driving a car. Because during Buddha's time, driving a car, well, of course not the car like us, but even like the horse car, is luxury. It's only the rich person, they ride on the horse cart as enjoyment for fun. So if a monk or nun start to ride on that and go around the city where most people don't even have a horse cart as such, then they thought, these practitioners are supposed to practice, why are they riding and then go around the city enjoying themselves? So people start to criticize. And that's why the Buddha set the rule, say, monks and nuns are not supposed to ride on the car. But today, you find that the cars become a transportation that's needed. So more importantly is that we should not say, I need to buy Mercedes-Benz, I need to buy Ferrari, and then every day you polish your car, and every day you spend so much time attaching to your car, then that defeats the purpose. But if you just use your car as a vehicle so that you can go to the hospital to visit someone, to go to help someone who are in need, and that transportation make it easier for you to achieve the purpose of helping others, while your mind is not attaching to that vehicle, then that's okay. You see? So that's why we need to understand the principle behind. So the Buddha was... the Buddha actually highlighted that precepts and dharma and the teachings has to go hand in hand. You don't say, don't practice the dharma as like in the dharma and precepts as the line as another separate one. Some people practice precepts and dharma in a separate way. In fact, behind the precepts, there are dharma. That is something very important that we need to understand. Okay? And then you can also see that because the Buddha's profound understanding on the teaching of dependent origination, he's able to understand the principle of why he set certain rules is to help the practitioner to reflect, because we say precepts are like the mirror for us to reflect on the afflictions that we have in ourselves. But then he's able to adjust himself when it's necessary. So the Buddha was actually very reasonable and humane. He set the rules and he accept changes when circumstances change. For example, these rules has been set and reset and then reset again and again. There's rules that monks and nuns are not supposed to keep food in their dormitory or in their room or in the boundary that they're living. So that is usual time. The reason why it was said, it was there are monks who are lazy to go out for alms begging. They beg and then they come back. They just keep it for a few days. They eat for a few days. They don't want to go out every day. So that's firstly, it's not hygiene. In the olden days, you don't have a fridge. And then secondly, you keep it there. You may eat as when you like. And so that's not a good practice as well. So he set rules. No one should keep food in the room. But then when it comes to time when there's drought, there's not enough food. When you go out for begging, a lot of time you come back empty bowl. And so some devotees are kind-hearted and they have some extra. They actually give it to the monks. So basically the monks would then have to make sure that they use it in a proper planned way so that they have enough for every day. So when cases like this happen, when they put it, they say you are not supposed to put in the building, in the vihara, so they put it outside. When they put it outside, rats, snakes will come and eat it away. So then the Buddha then set the sort of adjust the rules. During drought time, the monks and nuns can keep some food inside the room. So he adjusts according to circumstances. Because the principle was actually to avoid unnecessary desire. So now the circumstances is drought, and then if you look at the situation, so he adjusts accordingly. You can see that he's actually very open-minded and he adjusts himself. So there are also incidents where the monks don't wear shoes, but then Puna, who usually goes to a country where the ground was very tough, stony, to teach, it's just very difficult when you walk barefoot. So when Puna asked the Buddha that in this place where the ground is so tough and stony, it's all stones, can we wear shoes? The Buddha said yes. So he set rules as such that he adjusts according to the circumstances. So you can see that, and even the rain retreat. So initially, during rain retreat, the monks and nuns were supposed to stay in the vihara. You are not supposed to go out, and you should practice diligently. But then, there are times that devotees come and say, my mom is sick. Can monks come and visit my mom and give her some comfort? They said, no, this is rain retreat. We cannot go. So the devotees, the followers, the lay people feel very upset. They go and tell the Buddha, you set the rules that the monks are not supposed to go out. Now this is rain retreat, 3 months. Well, how can we get comfort from the monks? So then the Buddha said, during the rain retreat, if you are being invited to go out because of any things related to Triple Gem, either giving talks or giving comfort to someone who is sick, or even a blessing for a new house or something like this, because sometimes people build a new house, they don't want to wait for 3 months for the blessing, right? Or your own parents are sick during the rain retreat, you're allowed to go out for 7 days, and then later there were also some changes that some can go out for 2 weeks or even maximum up to a month. So if the reason you go out is for the purpose of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So that shows that he's very humane. He did not, because when you set the rules, sometimes you didn't think of this incident would happen. So when the incident happened, people complained to the Buddha, and the Buddha sort of adjusted it. So you can see that the Buddha's teaching is very humane, and it is... he have good understanding to the needs of the people. So it's basically a compassion and at the same time taking care of the practice that the Sangha members is needed. So just to have a balance of both. And also there are also rules that the Buddha set to try to avoid desire from the monks and nuns. For example, some people may accept, because usually every monk only have one bowl or ropes, you have three ropes. Then sometimes people give offerings. So when you have extra, what are you going to do? There are people who are very attached to nice clothing. They want more and more and more. So that's not very good. So the Buddha set some rules which allow some monks or nuns to keep extra, but then they need to follow the procedure. So one is that if you are given a robe and that's extra, you already have three. One is that you can say, I'll give this away to so-and-so who actually short of robes. And you need to give it away within 10 days. You don't say, I'll give it away, and you keep wearing it yourself for a month and don't want to give it away. So within 10, after you say you want to give it to someone, you need to give it away within 10 days. The other way, and another method where if everyone have enough and you feel like you want to keep it temporarily, then what you need to do is you need to declare this in the Sangha order, and then you will pass on from one person to another. Pass to the senior one, and then the senior says, I do not need it, and pass to the second one, no, I do not need it, pass to the next one, until no one wants it, and they come back to you. So you have the custody temporarily. So this is a very clever method, because you need to declare. And so when you declare, you feel embarrassed too every time it's you who declare that you need to have extra. It's a very clever method. So it makes you actually make it public. And then everyone knows that you have extra and you have gone through the process. And so and you have the temporary right to use it. So that's a very good way of reducing unnecessary desire, because to make it public, you probably don't want to do it too many times. So that's why you can see that the Buddha is very wise, and he's just very skillful. So we can see that how the Buddha practically used the teachings of dependent origination in life, and also to propagate the teachings of middle path, which is not indulge in meaningless, unnecessary practice. Well, he himself has shown that he have tried asceticism and it doesn't work, so he give it up and he practiced the middle path. So middle path is basically to lead a life in a normal life, but with a clear mind. So some people say, well, we have to follow the Buddha's way of practice. And so the Buddha have gone through asceticism, so we now have to follow the Buddha's way. It's not necessary. So the Buddha already, because that was the time when there were no Buddha. So now that he have realized the truth, and he told us the middle path, why do we want to go through the wrong path that he walked before and go the winding path again? So that's why the Buddha always tell us to make sure that we do not indulge in meaningless, unnecessary practice, rather to lead a normal life with a clear mind. And he also do not advocate supernatural power, sacrificing rituals, too much of rituals, mantras kind of things. He actually encouraged more self-reliance and right understanding. Okay, so so you can see that the Buddha shows his ability in making adjustment and move on by using his wisdom to see the causes and conditions and understand what is the best for everyone. And instead of holding to what he thinks to the old star that he has already done and said, no, I can't change because I'm a Buddha. So, but he's let's just look at the new causes and conditions and adjust accordingly. sometimes people have this problem that when you say something and you know that you need to change, but then because of your pride, you don't want to change. So that's why to be able to see what is best for everyone, instead of holding to what we ourselves want for ourselves only, so it's a way for us to learn to put aside our personal pride, ego, and attachment. Okay, and then during Buddha's time, you can see that the Buddha also see the importance of Sangha order, and that was also the reason why the Buddha, whoever wants to follow the Buddha's practice, the Buddha encouraged them to live in the community. Because in the community, you find that the monks and nuns can have mutual encouragement. They can try to remind and teach one another, support and comfort one another. So Sangha order is a very good place for us to reduce our self-centeredness, because you need to have love, give and take. All the Sangha members come from different family, everyone, different character, to live in a community with people that come from different background, it's not very easy. If you have very strong self-centeredness, you have very strong self-character, you find that you're going to have conflicts with a lot of people. So, but then, when we have conflicts, we need to remember, we are here to learn the Buddha's teaching. And the main cause of suffering comes from our self-centeredness. So we use this environment to polish away all our unique characters that we ourselves have. I'm not saying that you should not have your own view, but then a lot of the habits are actually not necessary. So that's why the Buddha encouraged people to live in community. Now, during Buddha's time, you find that Mahakashyapa likes to live by himself. So when Mahakashyapa come to old age, the Buddha actually encouraged him to come back to the Sangha order. But Mahakashyapa still insists that he wants to be by himself. Yeah. But because Sangha order is very important, and that's why it's called the triple gem, and there's a gem of Sangha. It's because it is with the Sangha that Buddhism can prolong. And it is with Sangha that you can present the energy of Buddhism. The Buddha lived for 80 years. How can the teachings of the Buddha prolong? It relies on the Sangha. And that's why when the Buddha formed the Sangha order, he says it's for 10 benefits that the Sangha order is being formed. Firstly, is to allow those who want to practice to come together and we can learn the rules together. Secondly, is for the excellence of the order, so everyone learns together, we can make sure that the order become better and conducive for practice. And thirdly, is for the comfort of the order, for people to feel comfortable in an organization where everyone follows the same rules, everyone have less afflictions. And also to have a Sangha order to restrain the unwholesome people who have unwholesome mind. So people who are nasty, they become monks, but if they have a nasty mind or they have unwholesome habits, then they are in the Sangha order. People can remind them, and with the collective effort, everyone can try to remind them and encourage them to change. And at the same time, the Sangha order also allowed people who are good to be able to practice in peace. Because in the Sangha order, there are rules and regulations. There are also procedure on how repentance should be done. So if someone did a mistake, then they should repent. And after they repent, the rules is that no one should talk about it anymore. That is a very good rule. Because when no one is allowed to talk about it anymore, you repent and you feel safe that no one is going to gossip behind me. If after repentance, everyone in the Sangha order gossips, you know, so and so, last week he repented, he did such a bad thing. So what's the purpose of you repenting? Because after you repent, people gossip and we make you feel more remorse and make you feel like you got nowhere to hide your face. That's not good. But Sangha order is a place that wants to allow people who, after their repentance, they can feel safe that no one is going to say anything behind them. They can start a new leaf. They can continue to move on with their practice. That is something very important. Because otherwise, you wouldn't people would not have the courage to repent. Because repentance is something very important. To admit that we make a mistake, to set determination that we are not going to do it again, and then we move on. But if people start to gossip behind, people start to talk about your bad things 10 years ago and still talking about it, it make you feel like you don't have a room to restart. You see? So that's why in the Sangha order, we make sure that it's a safe place for everyone to practice, and it also helps people to overcome the afflictions they have, and also to prevent the afflictions that have not arisen from arising. And also, the Sangha order helps to encourage, if it's the Sangha order which is in harmony with right understanding, you help to encourage non-believers to become, to develop their interest. And also for people who are already have faith and confidence, they will become stronger, they will be able to strengthen their faith and confidence. And lastly, most important thing is for the prolongation of the Dharma. That's the Sangha. So, and the Buddha emphasized that he is not the leader. He's not the leader of the Sangha order. He said, I am part of the Sangha order. He never posed himself as like he is the head. Although he probably give advice, he's a teacher to everyone, but he never say, I'm a leader. And so, so when people give offerings to the Buddha say, offer it to the Sangha. So when King Bimbisara want to offer bamboo grove, Vihara, to the Buddha said, offer it to the Sangha. I'm part of the Sangha. Mahaprajapati, the Buddha's aunt, wants to offer the Buddha a very refined robe. The Buddha said, offer it to the Sangha. So you can see how the Buddha is selfless. He did not pose himself as a leader, because he's separate to his self-centeredness. So this day, when we communicate with a lot of teachers, sometimes you find that practitioners or teachers, a lot of time after they teach for a while, and they start to develop this ego in themselves and feel like they want to control you, or they are the head. So, but the Buddha, who is such a wise teacher, such a great teacher, he is so modest. So that's something that we need to remember. So what have we learned from the Buddha? So we can see that, firstly, the Buddha highlighted that Dharma and precepts has to go hand in hand. We have to remember, behind the precepts, there are always principles of Dharma. Okay, that's one thing. And then the teachings of dependent origination, we need to relate to the teachings of dependent origination, that everything arises due to causes and conditions and its impermanence in whatever we see. And that allows us to be more flexible. That's how, as how the Buddha is able to adjust himself in a necessary when it's necessary. And the Buddha's great mind in helping others, benefiting others, in guiding and helping others, his great aspiration. You can see that for, since he attained enlightenment until he entered Parinirvana for 45 years, more than 45 years, he just take the toil and trouble to try to share the teachings with different type of people, from the young kids to the kings, all kinds of people. People who are intelligent, people who are slow. He teach them with great compassion, with great wisdom. So that's something that we need to learn. And also the Buddha's energy. We need to learn about his youthful, it's like young person. So that's why all of you should take up this responsibility, that his energy, and that there's something very important. He's engaging himself in the world, but not attaching to the world. That is something that a lot of people, when they practice, they either feel that I should not attach, they become detached. Try not to touch anything related to the world, because otherwise it stirs up my desire. It's just like we say, like try to run into the forest and avoid the five desires. That is not the ultimate way of practice. So, and then there are another type of people who attach too much to the world. But the Buddha is engaging in the world with a peaceful mind, with a detaching mind. So he's engaging in the world, but not attaching to it. And that can only comes with wisdom. Okay? And then he also encouraged community living. And that's something that is very important for the prolongation of the Buddha's teaching. But these days, you find that there are a lot of people or a lot of practitioners like to live by themselves. Probably not so much, I'm not sure about the Theravadan tradition, maybe not so much, but in the Mahayana tradition, sometimes you find that a lot of monks, just one person live in one unit, one apartment, and so on. It happens a lot in Taiwan, Singapore area. So it ends up people are not living in the Sangha order, living by themselves. So when every monk just live by themselves, you wouldn't be able to create a collective effort. The energy is diverse. And then, in fact, some people thought, if I live by myself, I can control my time better, I can practice quietly myself better instead of having so many personal people around me and so on. But they did not realize that the Sangha order is actually a good training ground. It's a ground that helps us to polish away our self-centeredness. Yeah. So that's why the Buddha said, form the Sangha order. So that's a sad thing. So community effort, community living is very important. And then in terms of the practice, you can see that the Buddha's this determination and vow, his diligence, confidence, this great body mind of helping others with diligence and determination. That's first thing. Second, his wisdom. And then thirdly, his compassion. Of course, he transformed his compassion through his generosity, morality, patience, and tolerance. So, so while we try to learn the examples of the Buddha, it is hoped that everyone can learn the great strength, the great energy, motivation of the Buddha. So have faith and confidence in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and transform and develop this strong mind of learning the Buddha's teaching, not only for ourselves, but also to try to share the teachings of others. And then, of course, we need to make sure that we always develop our wisdom. Listen to teachings, reflect on the teachings in our daily life. How the Buddha actually transformed the teachings of causes and conditions, cause and effect, impermanence in daily life, and how he, when he set the principles or rules, it's all this principle is there, but he's able to transform into application in a very lively way. And then we also need to learn the great compassion of the Buddha. So that's something that I hope that I can share with you with a lot of stories today. It is hoped that through these stories allows you to see how the Buddha was such a energetic, lively person during his time, and that how he actually engaged with people with great wisdom, great compassion, and a great purity of mind. Thank you. Is there any questions?
I just want to comment about the example of the Buddha. In the Buddha's era, he already have perfections in the paramita. But when if we want to see an import for them, we can see in the Jataka story that how he tried to make the paramita perfect.
Yeah. So the practice, of course, the practice come through many, many lives. Just like all of us here, everyone's acceptance levels are a bit different. It also can be due to our past cultivation. So if you want to know more about how the Buddha has practiced how, before he come to this final life where he attained Buddhahood, you can read the Jataka story, and there are more stories in there. Any other questions? Yes?
So you were talking about the orders and rules within the Sangha,
yes,
the community. And so basically what you say is that all the rules are set just because they want to achieve the principle behind it, which is non-self, no attachment and all that. So I want to relate it back to the community that we're living in right now, especially for those Asians who have you know, lived in the Asian culture. So, you know, we know that in the Asian culture, we're supposed to respect our parents and the elderly. Me personally, I mean, according to the principle of Buddhism, I don't find the need that we should, you know, respect the elderly, because isn't everyone supposed to be equal? So again, is that something to do with rules and principle behind? Then how would you sort of?
Everyone is equal. Even when you are equal, we should respect one another.
But it seems to me that like a lot of people place a lot of emphasis on.
Respect the elderly.
Yeah,
because the elders, they have gone through what? I suppose there are two things here. One is that we use this ethical values to reflect, to tell ourselves, to train our own modesty. Secondly, is that the elders, they have gone through more life experience than us. So there are some of the values or some of the things. Maybe you think that is not worth you learning, but it's some experience that they have gone through that may worth sharing with us. So when we say that, why do I need to respect the elders? In fact, respect is needed among everyone. You need to even respect your younger brother. So when we say that, why do I need to keep emphasizing on respecting the elders? It's because the elders have more experience than us, especially the elders who have taken care of us since we were young. And so therefore, we need to have a sense of gratitude towards our parents and the elders. Even the society that we are having now, it built on from the past to now. Although in the past, science and technology are not that advanced, but without all those invention or those work that people have done 100 or 200 years ago, we wouldn't have what we have today. As you learn science, when you do research, you stand on others' shoulder to write your thesis. So therefore, we need to respect our elders.
How would you comment on, say, the reason why I'm saying this is because, okay, maybe I'm being very judgmental right now, but from my observations, there are some, you know, forgive me for saying this, but there's some old people out there who sort of misbehave. You know, they behave really oddly, and it's really hard for me to judge them. And as the, you know, as an argument, they say that because I'm older than you, you're supposed to respect me. But then because you yourself don't behave well, then how am I supposed to, you know, respect you? So is that because, what I'm trying to say is that these people, even though they say that as the rules, as a culture, the younger is supposed to respect the older, but because they don't understand the principle behind the rules, so they behave in a very egoic way. Because from my understanding, I mean, if people follow strictly the rules, you know, young should respect the old, then wouldn't it create more ego within the elderly?
I think it's a mutual understanding. Mm-hmm. So, because the older generation, sometimes the way that they show their love is different to how the young people want to show their love. So your father may be very stern but full of love, but they'll never smile at you. Is that right? So that's why firstly, we do our part in showing our respect, okay? Secondly, if the person's behavior is not right, then either you can, if you are in the right position to give some advice, you can give some advice, but then skillfulness is very much needed. And sometimes you find that using love to dissolve that kind of conflicts is better than having the attitude like what you think that I should, you don't worth my respect and I don't want to respect you. It is going to heat up only. So it is by softening yourself and using your care and concern and then slowly change the person, that's where you find that mutual understanding can happen. Because you are guessing whether why are they behaving as such, and that's what we mean by generation gap. that young people are taught, why are you behaving as such? You don't show the love and care that I need. But then they thought, I'm showing the love and care and you're not appreciating what I'm giving you. So there is something here. Even husband and wife. The wife said, you didn't never say you love me. The husband will say, why do I need to say I love you? I act. And that's it. Right? So a lot of time communication is needed. Yes?
A bit of a silly question. But like in the Buddha's teachings, is there a difference between doing an act out of sincerity and being sincere in that act, as opposed to doing something out of duty? Like, oh, I have to do this because it's the right thing to do. It's in the teachings.
Yes. So some, it should be out of our sincerity, right. But sometimes when people cannot understand or people's mindset is not clear enough, then they may carry out just because it's out of duty. But then a proper way of practice is not only just carrying out of duty, but it should come from our heart.
Right.
Yeah. So that's probably two steps of transforming your mind. Yeah. So when you transform your mind, then you will see the good things of good point of others. When we start to think that, why do I need to respect you? Why do I need to? That's actually our ego. Our ego, our own ego. So ultimately, we need to know that, in fact, we should respect everyone. And when you respect others, you see the good point of others. All of us are not perfect. And so when we find that we will only see the bad point of others, then we have to ask ourselves, what is happening in myself? Why do I have so much grouch in myself? So I did tell of a Zen story before. There was this Zen master who is very well practiced, and there's a poet who practiced Buddhism very well as well. So one day, he always liked to go to this Zen master and they like to talk about Buddhism. So he went to the Zen master, and the Zen master was meditating. He said, I saw someone practicing meditation and he set like a countdown. Countdown is like this, right? And then the Zen master then tell this poet, say, I also saw someone practicing meditation. He looks like a Buddha. So this poet was very happy. So he went back to tell his sister. His sister learned Buddhism as well. He said, today I win. I said that the Zen master looks like a countdown. He said that I looks like a Buddha. And then the sister say, you lost so badly. And so this poet say, why did I lose so badly? The sister say, in the mind of the Zen master, he's peaceful, pure, and full of kindness. And that's why he look at you, you are like a Buddha. But your mind is as dirty as the countdown. And that's why when you look at others, everyone looks like a countdown. So that's why purify our mind, you find that a lot of problem will be solved. So as the Buddha say, it is only by using love that we can appease hate. using hatred, you can never appease hatred. So that's why to purify ourselves, to let go this grudge, I have to understand that this what we are holding on are actually impermanent causes and conditions. And we ourselves are not perfect as well. A lot of time when we did some mistake, we hope that other people can forgive us as soon as possible. We hope that our friends are all very open-minded and very embracing. But when our friends make some mistake, we hold on to it for such a long time. At the end, we hurt ourselves. Because when we hold on to the grudge, it become firstly, it make you not very happy. And secondly, because of that grudge, you find that whatever you see, you tend to become very impatient. Your anger sort of tends to blow up very easily. And thirdly, this become a habit, and it's strengthened. It become a habit that's going to follow us life after life. So that's why we need to learn to understand that we are not perfect. We have afflictions. Others have afflictions as well. Learn to be a bit more embracing. Learn to forgive. Learn to forgive. You find that you'll be a happier person. Yes?
Did the Buddha talk about mutual respect based on hierarchy or based on equality?
Mutual respect based on equality. Yeah. So there's no such thing as hierarchy in Buddhism. So we respect, it's more like teachers, student. So that's still not a hierarchy. So, but it's more, in fact, as we say, even between siblings, between friends, between teachers and students, I still need to respect you. It's not saying that because I'm a teacher, I do not need to show respect to you. You need to show respect to me. It's more mutual.
So you know how in Confucianism society, all the rules are there for people to respect each other based on the equality level, not because of the hierarchy.
Oh, that's Confucianism.
Oh, okay.
We are talking about Buddhism.
Maybe it's time that we stop. So thank you everyone for participating tonight. And